Enjoy the creep? You might enjoy a print of our album art. Go to thecreeppodcast.com for details.
Ready for dust off. In the pipe. 5x5.
Carrier has arrived.
Ready to plunder.
Ladies and gentlemen, fire up your SCVs. This is The Creep.
You've got The Creep.
With Scott Johnson and Brian Huff.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Creep. This is The Creep, episode 3. I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm Brian Huff.
And welcome to the show that's helping you find your way around the StarCraft universe. Thank you, everybody out there listening to our voices, for all your great feedback over the last couple of weeks. As I mentioned last episode, we hadn't had really a chance to respond to that first wave of feedback and interest and emails and everything else. Today, we will rectify that post-haste.
Yes.
Toot sweet.
It's been quite the monumental task going through it all, but it's been amazing.
Yeah, it has really been great, and we're thrilled with the fact that we rode a couple of weeks there as in the number one spot in the gaming category of iTunes, which is a real honor for us that we would do that well in our launch week and, I guess, two shows. For us, it feels like a week because really we crammed those two right in together.
Yeah, and yet it still doesn't feel like it's been 2 weeks since the last time we recorded.
The good news is, Brian, we are recording this show weekly now, so... That was an exception, but every Thursday afternoon we record, we get the show ready to be posted in the morning, but I'll give you a little hint, listeners. If you check the feed Thursday night, chances are you can get it early.
Hey, that's top secret. No one's supposed to know.
Oh, shoot. I forgot. That's in my contract.
Anyway. I felt all special because I was the only one that got to listen to it, but not anymore.
That's true. You had secret sneak peek.
Not anymore.
Anyway, we're really, really happy to be back, like we said. And we can't wait to just get started. You ready to jump in?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll start with a map.
The map of the week.
By the way, I want to make a comment that the entire show today will be dedicated to one Chris the Macintitioner. He knows why. We won't get into details, but we hope that he is doing well. We feel his pain, and we're glad the show has been a help to him. And that's all we'll say. So, Chris, this show, this episode, episode 3, is forever burned into the digital memory of the internet for you.
Barring any server crash.
Which has been known to happen. In fact, today all my feeds went down, but we're good. We're good now. All right.
Pay that bill.
That won't affect this show. Let's talk about the map of the week. This week's Mac of the week.
It's whack.
Is a Power Mac tower with 3 hard drives. No. It is the multitasking trainer map made by Stetzel. Would you say that's right? The way he means
to
say
it? Yeah, that's
what
I was going to go with. Stetzel sounds.
Stetzel. I recommend, again, until they have a better way to search through the map store or whatever they're going to call it, that's a good way to find maps is by the creator name, not necessarily the name of the map. But it's called the multitasking trainer.
And it's spelled wrong on Battle.net in case you can't find it.
Oh, is it multitasking spelled wrong?
It's multi-tasting, which is a whole different problem.
Yeah, that doesn't even sound like something I want to know about.
Yeah, no.
But it is designed to teach you how to be a multitasker in the game of StarCraft II. It is a custom melee map. And here's a brief description. A map created to practice and improve your multitasking, APM, and hotkey usage. How do you think it does at those promises, Brian Huff? B-Huff.
B-Huff, I forgot about
that. Right.
So the description should say, make you feel about how horrible you are at multitasking. Because that's like the first thing I thought of, because it's pretty intense. And I don't know if you tried the hard mode out at all.
I did. It's ridiculous.
Oh, here's my nightmares.
Here's my problem with that map right off the bat. I mean, essentially the very beginnings of it. And correct me if I'm wrong here, because my time with it was not pleasant. But the way it worked was you had your little starting base and your goal was to kill some other stuff. But up above you was a single Protoss probe that you also have direct control over. And he can die up to 5 times before you lose. I think that was on normal. I don't know.
It's 5 times on hard too, but
it's just harder. Okay.
Yeah, the Zergling moves faster and I think you have to rescue the Executor multiple times.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. And the goal is you got to do all this stuff at the same time. So you got to get your Terran going on. You got to get your build order happening. You got to get your guys making stuff. You got to do your normal StarCraft gig in the middle. But then you have these multitask things you got to do up top and down below. And the up top stuff was killing me because literally a zealot would come out and kill the probe. So you had to hurry up and move the probe. And the probe wouldn't do any kind of command queuing. So I couldn't just do like pathing, right? I couldn't do like, I couldn't make him just scout in a circle to get away from this dude that came after him. And it just struck me as janky. Like, I didn't feel like I was learning how to multitask. I felt like I was learning how to not like multitasking trainer by Steckel or Stencil.
Yeah, there's a couple issues. A, I felt like it was way too focused on that moving of the probe, which is not what you should be focused on when playing a game. There should have been more focus on the bottom left corner, which was your like building your army and all that jazz,
right?
As opposed to, I felt like literally it's like, okay, hotkey, move probe, hotkey. Like it.
Yeah, because their goal with that, right, is to say, you're in a game, it's rough, you're playing a strong component, you got your build order down, you're feeling good about it, and but you've also got somebody scouting. So you got a little Zergling or something running around looking for wherever the enemy is, or an SCV, let's say. And the goal is that you don't want him to just sort of randomly find something and then you not be aware of it, or miss a chance to kind of see what the defenses were already, or see how many units they had. You know, there's a point to scouting. It's not just to find out their location. It's to kind of find out what early tactics they're deploying. And so I understand the desire to teach people to do that better. I get it. Or another multitasking thing is, I've got four things in production over here. I have a third barracks over here pumping out nothing but Marines, and I need to coordinate those guys together and get them in groups and assign them hotkeys and get them where I need them to go. So there's multitasking there. And oh, by the way, there is another, I'm building another camp. And in that new command center, I've got to pay attention to production of workers and make sure I've got defenses, because I know those guys are prowling around and notice that they just scanned me. I mean, that's multitasking in StarCraft.
Yeah, this doesn't really teach you anything practical. I would have rather seen something with multiple bases that are independently getting attacked at random times with waves of opponents, and you have to simultaneously build these three separate economies. That would have made more sense to me, giving you experience with expanding and, like you said, attacking with one army while still building up defenses at another. That would have made more sense than moving a probe randomly around to keep it away from an enemy.
Then,
like, that's
on your point, then I would argue that the campaign is still better at this than this map was. The campaign has lots of opportunities, despite the fact that it has overpowered units and stuff you can't play in multiplayer. It gives you opportunities to really nail down the concepts or what multitasking means in the context of StarCraft and how to learn that. I feel like the campaign did a better job than this explicitly was trying to do, and it didn't for me.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example of a campaign mission that does that is when you first steal the Odin. Having the Odin blazing away on one base while you're building up to go to the next one, because you inevitably lose a decent amount of wraiths every time.
Yep.
That to me is better training than moving a probe all over
the place. Same with the lava level, where this stuff was rising all the time and you had to hurry up, move your dudes, and you're trying to time it right, and you know that the computer chick tells you it's 30 seconds until whatever, and you know you got a little time left, and you can kind of, well, it only takes, last time it took me 12 seconds to get my guys to high ground, and I'll do that, but while I'm thinking about that, I got to go over here and build this new thing. And so you kind of learned a lot of it there. And I would argue that almost the entire campaign was an effort, to a slow effort, you know, for new players. I came into this knowing StarCraft to, you know, enough of a degree that this wasn't all news to me. But I know a lot of players that came in and going, oh, I got to do all this at once. I got to micromanage this and macromanage that and start this and build that, all while I'm thinking about that guy down there who's about to come up and kill me. You know, they don't have that expectation. And the campaign slowly just holds their hand through that, through the end. It gets more complicated. And before you know it, you kind of know it pretty well. So I kind of sit back and go, I don't know what he meant with this map. I don't know what his goal was. And I don't mean to, I want people to try for themselves. I could be smoking crack. This may be the most awesome thing ever. Brian and I could be totally up in the night. Me and B-Huff are on the wrong tour, wrong rap tour. So maybe we're wrong, but I just came away going, well, that wasn't fun. Let me find something else to play.
Yeah, because, I mean, after last week with the Yavit map, like, I left feeling completely different this time. Because before, when I got Yavit, I'm like, wow, I learned something and I can see myself using this tool. This is like, once you do it once or you figure out a strategy to, quote unquote, beat the map, it doesn't really teach you anything new. And I don't see it applying directly to what I need to do in a multiplayer game. Whereas with the Yavit maps, that was exactly what it was doing, was teaching you build orders.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, I've been playing around with some of my build orders. Oh, and later in the show, I think we got a call on it, so I'll save it. But we got a lot of criticism for my love of carriers.
Yeah, I know. You were definitely getting flamed on that.
Yeah, I was getting major flamed. And it's funny because I think they're confused about what I think carriers are good for. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I'm excited to talk about what late game strategies continue to be viable in this game. Or are people just literally saying these units are useless, they shouldn't even be in the game? Because that's essentially what people told me.
You know? Yeah, there's a lot of, and I got a little bit of flack for me saying I'm not a huge fan of rushes. Because you've got two people, you have the group of people that think, why are you worrying about late game? You should just rush and end it quickly. And you got other people saying all the end game units are useless. Like it.
Okay, I'm just going to bring up a point about this. I mean, we're not trying to start a fight. I think all that feedback is valuable, because if this is the mindset of the common player, a high-ranking player, then okay, that's the way that they choose to play. I get that. It's fine. But I'm a little baffled about it being so poo-pooed, any kind of late-game strategy or any kind of late-game units or any of that stuff, that they think the rush and the first 5 minutes are everything to this game. They may be everything in terms of the way certain people like to play, but that is not the way I love to play. I like to play that way sometimes. Like, I love to throw people off with a crazy rush or something that just catches them off guard. I mean, that's, to me, again, that's the fun of the game. I also really like it when someone else rushes me and fails and has to regroup, by which time I can tear them the new butthole with my three new carriers that are full of interceptors. So I'm just saying there are ways to play this game that are fun and distinguished and interesting that aren't, you know, bam, 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 supply depot, bam, 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 you're dead. That's not fun to me personally. I'm not disparaging people out there. I understand that's how a lot of the high level play stuff goes. But then again, dude, I watched some YouTube like StarCraft matches in Korea this week. And some of these guys were going late game big time. Like, some of the biggest pros on their freaking channel dedicated to this crap, or many channels in South Korea, a match in front of millions of people, are doing late game strats.
Well, because they have to. Because the bottom line is yes, rushes are great if you're up against someone who doesn't know what to do when that happens. But if you're really that elite and you're playing in your Diamond League, like, those people are like, yeah, rush, great. And eventually it's going to have to get to late game. You're just not going to build Marines or Reapers or Zerglings or whatever you're building for your rush the whole match.
Or
you have to transition to that stuff if you can't beat your opponent with a rush.
Yeah, and some people argue that you can, you know, that a Zergling rush and then Zerglings as your chief point of attack, maybe some Baneling action for the rest of the game is a viable option. And I would say, yeah, it is. Everything is a viable option in StarCraft and StarCraft 2. You can do whatever the hell you want. And if you're winning, it was a working strategy. And I win with a lot of late game stuff with Protoss. I tend to lose early game with Protoss.
Yeah, and the bottom line is I have more fun with the late game stuff. Like, yes, there's times where I'm like, okay, I want to win and decimate this guy, and I'll throw, you know, do a Marine rush, or I'll run rush with Reapers or whatever, and I win sometimes, and that's great. But when I really want to have fun and enjoy it, there's times that I'd like to make it last longer.
I guarantee you there are people right now nodding their head going, yep, I knew it, I told you this is. And what I'm getting at is I am not disparaging anybody, and we are not in ultra defense mode here. We're not defending ourselves. We like to play the way we like to play, and other people like to play the way they want to play. And if your goal is to just crush noobs, then more power to you, dude. Go for it, whatever. But all I know is I've been in some matches that I would call some of the most epic game experiences of my life, not just in StarCraft, but games, period. And they involved a 2-hour ultimate fight battle ending thing with battle cruisers and nukes and carriers and a damn mothership and every huge thing you could throw at it. Brood Lords, for heaven's sakes. I mean, whoever gets to those anymore? Well,
exactly.
I do, damn it. They're fun. I love that stuff. To me, it's dominating the planet with the best tech. You know, maybe it's the Civ player in me. I don't know, which I've been playing a lot of, by the way, but we won't talk about that game.
We'll start another show.
That game is really good. But bottom line, play the way you want to play. And this is to answer just those few people over those 2 weeks that had some of this feedback. I am thrilled that they found their thing. And I'm thrilled that they think that it's the thing to do and it's the only thing to do, because if that makes StarCraft fun for them, then hot damn. But for me, it's a little of that, but then it's a little of this, and it's a little bit of that, and it's a whole bunch of Vikings one day, and the other day I'm trying something with roaches I've never tried before. That's what's interesting to me.
Yeah, it's really using all the units for what they were put in the game for, because every unit has a purpose. No, every unit may not be the best option for Diamond League or whatever you're trying to argue, but the bottom line is each one has a use, and it's fun finding those times where it's like, oh, I can actually make a carrier strategy work because of what my opponent decided to do. Or yes, I can build 5 zillion battle cruisers and fly in, or I can actually get to a mothership. Like, that's where the game is fun. And the bottom line here really is, the people who are listening to this show, and you know, that based on iTunes, it's quite a few people, they don't want to do that, or if they want to do that, they got to find that middle ground first. You don't just go from I'm a complete noob to StarCraft to, oh, looking me, I'm on YouTube and I'm winning tournaments in South Korea. Like, that's, there's that middle ground, and that's really what we're tailoring the show to, is people who want to learn all these things and then make these decisions for themselves.
Yeah, and you should see what I got 4 queens to do the other day. It was awesome.
Whoa, oh, man. I don't know if that's appropriate.
So awesome. Playing with friends, again, it's the way to play.
Yes.
All right, time for this.
Mod of the moment.
Yes, that's right. That sound can only mean one thing. It is time for Mod of the Moment. And this week we are talking about Desert Strike. And you might in your heads go, well, I had a Genesis and I remember a game called Desert Strike, published by Electronic Arts, that was a little helicopter dude. And I was really hoping that that's what this is, but it wasn't. It was not somebody's remake of the classic Genesis Desert Strike. I think the SNES had it as well. It is a tug-of-war game type. The author is called Squarely, S-Q-U-A-R-E-L-Y. And what did you think of Squarely's work on Desert Strike?
Well, I seem to have this knack for picking types of maps and mods that just make you cringe, and we've done it once again. So tug-of-war, it's one of those love it or hate it, for the reason that you cite is you can't really control your units.
No, you have building. No control over them.
Yeah, none at all. So it's literally just about macro and how many units I can flood and maybe some strategy to getting the right type of units.
Yeah.
But I felt like...
And you can have your worker go over there. See, the way it works is this. You've got, if you play Tug of War, then you kind of know the drill. Down in the corner, your corner, you've got an SEV, a command center, and then you've got a bunch of Vespine geysers, and then there's kind of a wall, and you can break through that wall and get to other stuff, I think, but then there's a river, so I don't think you can actually go past that, but you can break the wall. Anyway, multiple players can play this, and there's a teleporter spot that you can actually jump into with your SCV that will put you out on the main battlefield, and that SCV can now build bunkers and other defensive structures, but unit production happens automatically. It's a little like tower defense or something. And you do it by building the right kind of stuff. So if you want 2 marauders, then you would build a barracks with the reactor on it. If you want, Vikings, you'd build a starport, and I can't remember which add-on did it. But it's not. There's a lot of stuff that's not the same as a standard game, so I'm not describing regular StarCraft stuff here. In fact, they had, what were the units they had that they wouldn't normally have in the game, except single player? What you call them? The old walkers. The shot air stuff.
Yeah, and the name. Wow.
Air and ground. What's wrong with me? The freaking Goliaths. So Goliaths will come out there, and then you can, the not Odins, but the Thors will come out, and they might send 2 at a time if you build a certain thing. And all the while, you're earning money and gas over time, and then you spend that money, and then go out there with your worker and build some bunkers and hope for the best, and then go back and do some more. And they slowly go over this battlefield, and the other defending side will, you know, kill your guys, or you'll eventually overwhelm them and win. And again, it's like it's literally tug of war.
Yeah, it has some, they try to inject a little bit of strategy into it. There's the whole, what time do you take the silo in the middle? Because when you do take it, it does spawn like, and I think it was an Ultralisk that has all these special powers that is in control of the person who didn't destroy it.
Right.
So there's some strategy to it, but I found like there were too many times I won just by sitting back and letting them destroy the silo and then sending my army in with this Ultralisk and just like wipe everybody out.
See, my issue with this isn't so much that this is a bad tug of war map or a bad map in general or a bad game type in general. I'm sure it's probably not. I'm sure there's a ton of fans for tug of war out there. I prefer control over my units directly, so that's kind of a problem for me. But moreover, I'm more concerned that what we're seeing in the custom maps are stuff we saw in Warcraft 3 and in Starcraft to some degree. We're seeing tower defense, tug of war, the millionth version of, what was that map we were talking about earlier?
Big Game Hunters.
Oh, Big Game Hunters. Like, how many Big Game Hunters can we have? Well, let's see. How about another 500 today? So that stuff's happening a lot. I'm not seeing the crazy innovation we were promised yet. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm not even saying that this is, we've given it enough time, because I don't think we have. I think this stuff has to come. It's a slow burn, and the good stuff's being worked on, and it ain't ready to be released. So
yeah, we were talking about that before the show. Is like, we're in that weird period where things just haven't developed yet. But we've seen in some of the not quite done yet RPG maps or mods, you can really call them maps or standalone games, and some of the stuff that's using stuff in first person and things dropping loot. And this engine is capable of just amazing things. It's just going to take time. In the meantime, we are going to see, like we talked about before, remakes of old stuff. Desert Strike is an old StarCraft map. Same thing with Big Game Hunters. Like, right now, people are making what they know because the formula is already there. You just need to translate it to the new game.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know what that means for the long haul or what it even means for the show, but we're going to try to find the stuff that looks interesting. This certainly looked interesting, and it just kind of came off as, yeah, you know, that looks like it could have just been a Warcraft 3 mod, and I'm sure it was, and there were a million tug-of-war mods for that, and I didn't like them then, I don't like them now. I'm not even a Dota fan, and there's a ton of Dota rip-offs already on this StarCraft.
I found myself frantically clicking because I wanted to control stuff. And I'm like, why is he doing that? That's so stupid. And I went to move him, and I can't.
Yeah, you can't do it. So if you're not a fan of not being able to control your own units, we do not recommend this type of map. But as these maps go, I guess this one's fine.
Yeah, it's not bad. It gets one Reaper popping like a balloon for me.
Is that our new rating system?
Yes, we're just going to pick random units and things they do.
All right, mine's it's like a bit. What's it like? It's like a sunken colony. It's so bad it's not even in StarCraft 2. How about that?
Oh,
I guess now they have those other things, but I miss the sunken colony with its little tongue that would come up. That was cool. StarCraft 1 for the win.
Yeah, definitely some flavor that is not yet found its way into the game.
Not exactly. I mean, what's the one now? I can't even remember now. The one that burrows and has the long poke. It's the ground defense. You know,
spine.
Spine crawler. What is it?
Spine crawler, spine creeper. I don't play Zerg.
So I play Zerg, but I rarely build those. I think they're kind of useless right now.
Now, you do realize you just opened yourself up to 500 emails about how amazing those things are.
I know, but then again, I've been doing a lot of Zerg, playing around with different build orders and messing around. And I found a whole bunch of stuff that just downright bashes those things and says they're not worth using. Oh, and now that the patch is live, by the way, I can't wait to start hearing what people say about that. But did you... Oh, my brain just went in a whole different place, and I'll save it because I want to make sure to bring this up. Maybe I'll say it now. I don't want to forget this.
Okay.
Because we're basically done with Desert Strike anyway. Stick with the Genesis game. It's a classic.
Right. You can find it on MAME or whatever.
Right. But here's what I'm going to say about the patch. Just before the patch dropped, there was that big controversy floating around the internet. And we haven't done a show since. I think this was last week. So we didn't have a chance to talk about it. But the talk is about this strategy that people, or it's an exploit, not a strategy, that people have figured out a way to use their SCVs in a way that it's very micromanaging, but if they do like kind of this queued movement thing, they can boost money production or crystal production as much as 7-10% over the entire haul of the match, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that is a balance breaker.
Oh, and yeah. If you are in a high level where you and your opponent's skills are very, very 10% more minerals, 10% quicker in getting units out.
Yep.
That makes a big difference.
It makes a big difference. 7% is a lot of crystals in the end, or even in the beginning. They'll get Marines out faster, guaranteed. So I don't know what, you know, the big controversy was that this game is broken until someone fixes that, because you'll never know if you're in a match with somebody who's mastered that. And if they have, well, then it's completely unfair and it breaks the ladder system. And, you know, it's a real concern. So I thought, oh, well, no wonder they've delayed this patch. They're going to put that in there and fix that. And it's an animation thing is what it turned out to be. And as much as I've not done extensive study about this stupid exploit, because I'll never use it. But it
takes too much work to figure it out.
It really does. And even those who do figure it out, still too much work. Like, it's a huge pain in the butt. But if somebody wanted to, they could. And yes, it would turn the tide of the game. So I thought they were holding off on that. I check out the patch notes. not in there. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if players are going to flip out, if they're still, you know, mad about this, if Blizzard's going to respond with a with another follow-up patch. But I couldn't see it in there. There was no reference.
Yeah, so either they just ninja nerfed it or...
They could have. It's a small enough thing where you could see them doing that.
Well, yeah, it's like fixed SCV animation. Like, I mean, yeah, they I don't could know get if that's worthy of a patch note.
But. Yeah, they could get away with that. But it was an interesting development, let's just say that. When I heard about that, I was like, oh, this is where...
How do you figure that out?
That's the thing, dude. You like, know there are guys, some of which may have...
sent us emails.
Who are major, like the equivalent of theory crafters for World of Warcraft. I guess you could still call them that here. And they are so into this and figuring out how to squeeze every last, you know, puff of gas out of a Vespene geyser or whatever that gives them some advantage. I'm sure that people figure out a way to automate it. Like already you and I could take the map editor and build some crazy map that does nothing that, you know, but prove that battlecruisers can't do a certain thing or that, you know, roaches are better if they're not ever burrowed because if they burrow, there's this reason or whatever. Like whatever it may be, they're at home right now running simulations. You know what I mean? Like they've got the map up. They've built some kind of thing that proves it. They run the map. They watch it. They record it. They write their results. They're like scientists, these guys.
And then they have way too much time in their hands and leave horrible iTunes reviews.
That is so true. Anyway.
But yeah, it's interesting. I'm sure they will fix it. I mean, this goes back to the doomsayers in Warcraft. Like, it's not going to be the end of the game. If it's that game-breaking, they're going to fix it. They may already have. If they haven't, they're going too soon. If it's really causing that many problems, Blizzard knows. And a game especially that has been renowned for being well-balanced, they're not going to let something like that break it.
Yeah, it's still a question of whether or not Blizzard thinks it's... You know, it must be weird to be them. I mean, this company that built such a balanced game in the first place. And yeah, they tweak it like they are with this patch. And that's fine. Whatever. They have to tweak it and fix it. But for the most part, it's incredibly balanced out of the box. And then have all those months of beta testing with hardcore players just beating the hell out of the game. And then at this late date, find out there's this weird animation bug.
It's yeah, something just, that's not really gameplay oriented.
Yeah, it's so just like, it's such like a weird off. Process. It's so weird how people can just find these nooks and crannies and bring it to their attention, sometimes years into release. So who knows what next year will bring. We found out that Protoss, they're not really saying my life for ire. They're saying my
wife's for
my
hire.
Wife. My wife for hire. It was our title last week, wasn't it?
Yes.
It's pretty stupid. Anyway, so there you go. Mod of the moment, Desert Strike, our comments on stupid stuff. And now we're going to take a quick break. And the reason we're doing this is we want to share with you guys something that was sent to us by a guy named Regular Gonzalez, as opposed to irregular or
abnormal.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, goes by the name Regular Gonzalez. He sent us a song that he created for The Creep, and it is awesome in almost every possible way of describing it. And we did feel remiss if we did not play it in the show. In fact, we felt it was so good. We didn't even want to tack it on the end of the show. We thought we'd just stick it right in the middle. So give it a listen. It's not too long, maybe 2.5 minutes. And it's pretty freaking rad, wouldn't you say? Would you agree?
I was so excited when I opened this email and played this song. Like I Twittered it. And the funny thing was is like I Twittered it almost instantaneously. And then I'm getting like all these private messages like, that is amazing. Yeah. Like, It was awesome. I could not stop laughing. I probably listened to it 10 times last night. It was just, I love it.
Well, I sent it around too, put it on Twitter, and a lot of people, you know, we got a lot of feedback. So here's to you, Regular Gonzalez. We'll be right back.
What makes Zerglings run so fast when they rush towards your base? What do you call the homeless guy who wants to smell your face? What's the latest Frog Pants podcast wasting your iPod space? Well, it's The Creep, it's The Creep, it's The Creep. What spews out of Overlord butts once you pop the cork? What's the whiny song sung by that whiny guy Tom York? What's the StarCraft podcast that is kosherer than pork? Well, it's The Creep. It's The Creep, it's The Creep. What does Zeratul think about all the time? What is always on Jim Rayner's dirty mind? What does the Queen of Blades call her bikini line? Well, it's The Creep, it's The Creep, it's It's the creep. What oozes out of tumors from the rear end of the queen? What does Tychus call his little one-eyed space marine? What pops out 9 months after instant screws raid warning? Well, it's the creep, 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 it's the creep.
And we're back. Once again, thank you, regular Gonzalez.
And still just as funny the 11th time I've heard it.
Ask him for him by name. Don't ask him for him. Anyway,
that might be a little weird.
And it makes no sense. All right, let's move on with the show. We like to talk about units. Today is no different. Let's do a unit spotlight.
You want a piece of me, boy?
Unit spotlight.
Yeah! All right, time to talk about a unit spotlight this week. We are talking about the Zergling, a ultra-common unit in the game of StarCraft. Has been forever. These are the feral dogs of the universe. There's always lots of them to deal with. They're a huge pain in the butt early in the game. Later on, not so much. But here's a chance for Scott Fletcher to weigh in on his definition of the Zergling.
The Zergling. The small, savage dune runners of the sand world,
the guys,
were incorporated into the swarm to serve as lookouts and assault troops. Although Zerglings are little more than feral animals, they work well in large groups under the command of larger Zerg. The voracious Zerglings are fond of ripping enemies to shreds with their razor-sharp, sickle-like limbs and fangs. Because the genetic code of the Zergling is so simple to replicate, a single larva can spawn two separate Zerglings.
He seems awful surprised about that. Sheesh.
Wow. You should have warned me ahead of time. He can have some sort of like verbal stroke when he said that.
Yeah, he's a man.
I love it.
If you've last week you heard the Zealot introduction, which we actually added later. We had some sort of post on that. But Scott Fletcher, he makes everything sound better. He could describe chronic diarrhea to me and it would sound better.
No one is ever going to forget the home world of the Zergling now because they're just going to hear him be like, Ziggy. And it's going to be amazing.
He kind of got that wrong. It's kind of like Zealot or Zealot. How did we decide to do it?
We're calling it Zealot because apparently people don't understand that it was a joke. Like, I got so much, like, seriously, Zealot.
You got a lot of heat for that.
We were trying to make it a thing, but apparently.
That's okay. It distracted from people bugging me about my carrier strategy. So, whatever.
That's why you did it. You're like, oh, God, the carrier thing. We got to come up with something else.
True that.
Brian's going to say it wrong.
So, the Zergling, primary uses versus ground units to sort of harass, bug you. Rush is a good another use of the Zergling. Of course, strong against Marauders, Hydralisks, and Stalkers. Weak against Hellion, or however you say it, Banelings, and Colossi, which is plural for Colossus, I guess, if there's multiples.
Yes.
By the way, I never use a Colossus. I should, but I don't. And also, they are too expensive. Anyway, that's another point. That's another story for the day we talk about Colossus, so I'm not going to talk about them now. Anyway, upgrades include adrenal glands and metabolic boost. So just surface thoughts on Zerglings as viable units in the game.
I mean, they're definitely viable. They probably get used, I would argue, used more from a tier one unit standpoint than any other race. They probably last longer into the game than, say, your Zealot or your Marine. I also think they require a bit more micro because they are, even though you get a lot of them, they are quite fragile. But the difference between them being controlled in a macro way versus a micro way is like night and day. They're so much more effective if you're concerned with flanking and surrounding your opponent and things like that, as opposed to just like clicking attack and letting them do their thing.
They also have a psychological component that doesn't get talked about a lot. And if you are not a player who's become completely just soul dead to the way the game works and looks and feels, if you're a, you know, intermediate to sort of new player and you see a swarm of these things coming over the hill at anything you're building or any of your stuff or your dudes or whatever, it's intimidating. It's like, whoa, dude, I don't know that I can compete with this guy. Even if you're better suited to take out these Zerglings than he is to take out you. You just don't know it. There's a bit of that sort of stream of hell coming out of the fog of war that you are certain that you're now overpowered and may as well just give up and you lose the mental game.
That is hard not to get panicked.
Yeah.
Because if you look, you know, if you look at the rush numbers, you're talking about five Reapers or five Zealots versus 20 plus of these Zerglings running at you, and they're completely surrounding your guy. Even if they're taking a small bit of health out of your guy in comparison to the damage he's dealing, it's hard not to panic and overreact when you have that many units coming at you.
Yeah, it's just frightening. Now, let me tell you what I use them for the most. So here's Scott's strategy. I use, when I play Zerg, and you don't, but I play Zerg pretty regularly. I use them mostly for what the internet likes to call mineral harassment. But basically, I just call it disruption of economy. And I like to flank and find holes in the defenses of whoever it may be and find ways into the back door. And sometimes that means even just, because they're so fast, running them over and through the rest of your units is oftentimes enough time to have a bunch survive any sort of AoE attacks or whatever, which they're really vulnerable to, but have them get back to the back crystals and take out most of your SCVs, which is a huge, you know, boost to me and kill to you. Even if I lose all those Zerglings, 25 crystals a piece is what they amount to. You know, you buy them in sets of two, but still, when they go back there and take out your economy, you have a huge thing to recover from, even if I wasn't even there very long. So some would just say, well, yeah, you're just talking about a simple rush. But for me, it's a very strategic strike, one that is aimed at killing an economy and messing that guy up for the first part of the game. And I'll tell you this. This feeds into my point earlier in the show, which is if I'm playing Zerg and I can pull off that kind of attack and I can succeed at it, that moves me into late game strat, because those guys usually scramble to recover for a while. And by then I'm pumping out some serious later game units. And that's where the fun is for me. So Zerglings sort of pay for the way for me. They kind of make it possible.
Yeah, they really open up that window that you need to really, because it takes time and they buy you time, because that person not only has to get caught up and replace the units you destroyed, but if you're attacking their mineral line, they've got to build, you know, probes or SCVs or whatever you took out and then start building up. And in that time, that gives you plenty of time to start getting into your tier two and your top tier units.
Yeah, that's true. It's also great for sort of confusing things later in the game. So if you're still building those guys, you can use them obviously to convert to Banelings if you want, but I often use them just to sort of throw stuff at people. It's like, oh, he's attacking from the west. Well, I no longer care about those, you know, 60 Zerglings, but it still looks like something coming that's bad. And while that's happening and while you're being distracted, I come up through your rear with, like, you know, broodlords or something and start tearing up the back of your base. So they're great for distraction.
And they're a cheap way to harass at the expansion, too. If you get the expansion going and they're just starting to build there, just because you can't get in, you know, you're against Terran and they've walled off their main ramp, you can still harass them and do the exact same thing without burning more expensive units to take out their expansion.
Yeah, I agree. Now, the road to get to where I want to get with Zerglings, I've learned that I tend to overpool. If you're familiar with the term, awesome. If you're not, I'll describe it to you. When you see overpool, that terminology, this refers to getting 10 out of 10 supplies, building an overlord at that point, and then building a spawning pool. That I'd almost do this every time, and some people may say this is the lazy man's build order, but with Zerg, it just kind of works for me. I tend to win, and so it's not really a big deal. It's a kind of a defensive build, and it's a good build if the enemy is rushing. So your queen and your first set of Zerglings should really be ready by the time anybody gets to your base. So if I've got some Zealots on their way, although now they may not come as early.
just a few seconds.
That patch really screwed those guys, or potentially screwed them. But anyway, The having those guys pop out so quick in this particular build order, I overpool almost every time. And to do anything else feels like I'm not... I don't have a lot of variable build orders with Zerg. This is how I do these guys every time. I shake things up all the time with Terran and Protoss. But when it comes to Zerg, it's 10, Overlord, Spawning Pool, Queen, Zerglings. And if no one's coming, rush. And keep it pumping them out.
It's a lot easier, and again, I have limited experience with Zerg, but it's a lot easier to just do it that way every time with Zerg, because there isn't a whole lot of variation to what you can do early game. And because you're sacrificing your drones to build structures, I feel like I'm more comfortable if I've gone full 10-10 and gotten all the drones out and then start building things than if I'm, you know, dealing with Protoss where I don't have to spend time building stuff, or with Terran where I can go Marines or I can go Reapers or I can go Marauders early on. It just seems like a more straight path for Zerg.
Yep, I agree. So yeah, there's your Zergs. Let's talk about, since you're not playing Zerg much, let me tell you a quick story. So
okay.
Playing I think we did six people, so 3-on-3 the other day, playing with friends. Mark Spagnuolo was there, his wife Nicole. Some people know these people's names. Anyway, Brian Dunaway, Eric Van Skyhawk and Appslappy. We were all in there playing together, and it was a total blast. That's always fun, never sad. Oh, Tom Merritt played as well, and he's a total StarCraft noob, so it's fun to play with a guy who doesn't know everything yet. He's kind of getting the hang of stuff, and having him on a team is an interesting challenge, and he's getting better. So you as a team get better, and we kept swapping around players because we'd lose one match and then win the next one handily. So they'd mix up the teams again. And then this other guy named John Funk joined us as well. Anyway, just didn't want to leave him out. Point is, we're playing this game, and as usual, we go late game. So we get past the rushes. We're not finishing the game in 5 minutes. And I'm Protoss, and I'm going for my epic freaking 12 carriers, wipe out everything move. And I love it. I enjoy that. It's so destructive. I fly these bad boys into these towns. I'm tearing towns up. Here's the mistake I made. And I do this kind of a lot in late game. I'm so interested in micromanaging who they're attacking and making sure they're focus firing like on the command center or on the towers or whatever first. I'm doing a lot of command, shift attack moves to queue stuff up in a town. I'm like, all right, well, these are priority targets. My teammates bringing in these ground units, so let's get those tanks first. And I'm just swarming them with interceptors. It's out of control. I get so cocky with that I have completely forgotten about my base. Completely. I mean, like, just completely forgotten about it. Brian Dunaway waltzes in there with about 15 Thors. I'm not kidding you. Like, 15 of them.
Oh, boy.
That's freaking rough. I'm just here to tell you right now, there is not much on this planet that will stop 15 Thors from doing their business.
Yeah, especially when your carriers are on the other side of the map tearing something up.
And so I think I ended up losing that match. I can't remember exactly for sure, but I may have won that one. I can't remember. But the point is that if you are going to do like I did and just kind of rely on this final strike, which sometimes works out for me, you got to have more going on at home, because by the end of the game, I can't remember if we won or lost, but if I think we won. Either way, even if we won the game, I had nothing but carriers. Like, I was done. I had some leftover crystals, so I could still buy interceptors that were destroyed, but in the end, I had nothing. So it's like, 12 carriers without a home.
Yeah, it's like then they're just going to kind of like fly around, and once your interceptors are dead, they're useless.
It's just so much fun, dude. I just cannot say enough about what StarCraft does to me. There's a very special place that StarCraft tweaks for me in my system that just says, dude, look what you're doing and how far you got and how overpowered you are right to this moment and how nobody expected you to do this. And there's something special about that. And then to hear everybody yelling on Skype and being all, giving each other crap. And it's unlike most other PC game multiplayer experiences for me.
Well, that's why I'm so looking forward to doing Creep Nights, because having tons of players that all feel like this, I just can't imagine it being anything but just amazingly.
I can't wait. I can't not wait to get my butt handed to me by one guy and then cream the next dude. And we need to get some like 4-on-4 epic 8-player matches going and get multiples going that night. It'd be fun to do like our own bracketed tournament. Dude.
Yeah, I know. I've already kind of started sketching things out. It's coming, folks. It's,
all right. Keep your eyes peeled. B. Huff is about to go on tour across the country.
You know it.
For real. He's actually got to do some traveling here. But when things start settling down, we will for sure be bringing Creep Nights to a computer near you. All right. Anything else you want to say about Zerglings before we move on?
No, I think you've said it all.
We are going to start a new segment this week, and it's called Achievement Unlocked. I don't have a cool bumper for it yet, but Achievement Unlocked is and it look at an achievement in the game, both multiplayer and campaign, or whatever we feel like talking about that week, where we talk about an awesome achievement. This came an idea from B. Huff over here, and which is awesome. I think this is a great idea. I can't wait to talk about it. So, Brian, do the honors. What are we talking about this week in Achievement Unlocked?
We are going to talk about the achievement Zealot Push.
Ooh.
And I said it correctly.
You had me at push. What does that mean? What happens there?
So essentially, and I'm going to simplify this a little because the wording is actually a bit confusing. Essentially, you have to warp in 5 Zealots within the first 255 seconds of a match. Nice thing is with the new patch, they implemented a way to put a clock right on your UI there so you can keep track of how long the match has been going, which I'm a huge fan of.
People really wanted that. So it's nice that Blizzard responded with providing that. I also like that they put in some technical stuff like the frame rate checker and all that. So if you're if you're struggling with a bad frame rate and you want to know kind of how to tune it down to get the best frame rate and the best gameplay experience, having that on there now is great, because it's like WoW did that. And it just gave you an idea of what your frame rate was, and you could sort of knock the details down. So that's pretty cool too. Anyway,
and you can even get Wi-Fi strength, which I thought was pretty cool.
So tell us, there's got to be a strategy to nailing this, and this is a multiplayer achievement, right?
Yes, this can be done in your custom game or in a league match or whatever. You can do it either way.
You can even do it against the computer.
Yes, you can. And I picked this specifically because it basically teaches you to do the two-gate rush we touched on last week.
Yeah. And is this affected too negatively by this patch with the slower build of both Zealots and the slower research, or not research, is it the research that got extended? I can't remember.
Yeah, the two things. One doesn't affect it, which was the warp gate cooldown. But yeah, there's 5 seconds extra on the Zealots.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it yet since the patch came out, but based on the time I got it done before the patch, you should still be able to pull it off, and it's going to be pretty tight. I wouldn't be shocked if this gets bumped up 10, 15 seconds in a later patch.
Oh, like the achievement will get tweaked.
Yeah, like they'll go like say 265 or 270.
You know what? That's really interesting, because this is the first time Blizzard's faced this with a strategy title with having achievements in there. They can't be so willy nilly with changes, or at the very least, if they make changes to the core gameplay or changes how long something takes, and that affects an achievement's difficulty or even possibility, they have to go address that.
Exactly. You can't just make them all feats of strength.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so I'll be interested to see if I'm going to give it a try tonight just to see if it's still possible. But so the basic gist of it is you're going to do a two-gate rush build is essentially how you're going to start out. So you're going to start building probes until you're at 9 of 10.
Okay.
You're going to build a pylon. And then once that pylon, well, before the pylon, so you can go ahead and build your 10th probe.
So first 50 crystals after that, build your probe.
Right, build your 10th probe. So your probes are just going to town, getting your minerals. That's all you really need to focus on for this one. Right. You're going to go ahead and pop two gates, one after another.
Yep.
As soon as you get those two gates up, you pop your next pylon as soon as you have enough minerals. So that's going to make sure that you have the supply you need to get all the zealots out.
Okay.
And I've tried it a couple different ways without being so focused on probes and just rushing straight to getting gates. It just doesn't work. You need to have that resource creation, you need to have both gates up.
Okay, and you got to be using Chrono Boost on both.
Right, so you're going to get your last pylon up, and then you're going to start pumping out the Zealots out of both gates, Chrono Boosting as much as you can. You should, with the exception of the last Chrono Boost, you should have enough energy to get them all out using the Chrono Boost. The last one, I had to wait like 3 seconds for it to get back up so I can get that last Chrono Boost in. But you just build three on one, two on the other, Chrono Boost every chance you get, and ding, you get it. It's fairly simple, but I like it because it teaches you an early game rush build strategy.
Yeah, heck yeah. I love these things. I love achievements in games. I think they're brilliant, and this is yet another one, and I'm going to do this tonight. I'm going to try to knock it out, baby.
Oh, God, don't you... And you're like, your strategy was horrible.
I'll report next week and tell you if this is any good or not. And
this worked for me pre-patch.
Yeah, if it works for me post-patch, that's good news for everyone. So
yes, we won't have to worry about them tweaking it.
Give it a try. This is great. Giving people a little homework for the week. If they haven't done some of these achievements, gives them a chance to do it. I know a lot of people don't want to bother with looking up achievements all day. So we will do that work for you.
And if you want to dabble in Protoss, it's a good way to learn an early build.
Quick mention I want to make before we get to feedback, and we do have a lot of it today. Got a Flickr link from a fan showing a Lego-built Thor. This came to us from David B., and I wanted to make mention of it. I'll have a link in the show notes. It is awesome. Like
The build quality and finish from what I could see from the pictures, like...
It's crazy. It's Lego, but...
Yeah, he had the stickers and everything. Like, I loved it.
Yeah, this guy's not messing around. My favorite part about it, I think, is it's not even just like a little janky one. It's a full-on huge Thor. Like, it's big enough to, be heavy on your desk.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people mention, like, it just looks like it has weight to it. Like, it's got detail to it. It's got all the cannons. I love it. Like, I want Lego to make that so I can build it and set it on my desk.
It's entirely awesome. I want this bad. So, anyway, thank you again, David B. David B. is not the creator, but he's the one that let us know about it.
But Blizzard, if you see this, you need a licensing deal with Lego.
Yeah. The guy who made it is called Sven Junga. I'm not kidding. That's his name. Yeah, he's got a lot of time on his hands.
Well, thank you, Sven.
Good job, Sven Junga. All right. Well, that's that. Where the hell are we? Oh, yeah.
I think it's time for feedback.
It might be.
Feedback.
All right, time for a little feedback, emails and calls. We got a number of calls, four of them that we felt like would be good ones for this episode, and a couple emails to boot. So let's just get right into the calls. First one up. Let's see. Whoops, that one just left me. Getting to play with good people is the question.
Hey, Scott and Brian. First off, I'm a huge fan of the Frog Pants shows, and I'm really looking forward to hearing this show. I love StarCraft. I love the scene. I love watching pro matches with commentary on YouTube, and I can't wait to hear your spin on all that. Now to the reason I write. I'm nowhere near the skill level of gold players and beyond. I think the ladders are fun, but sometimes they can be downright stressful, and sometimes I have anxiety thinking about jumping into one. A lot of times I just want to play a relaxed game with familiar, friendly people. I really like playing with my friends, however, most of them are not big RTS fans. They bought the game, but they basically played through the campaign and have now gone back to WoW. How would I go about finding friendly people to play with casually without the pressure to ladders? The StarCraft friend system and community really doesn't lend itself to getting to know people. Thanks.
Okay, there's a few answers on this, but I'm going to give you one that I think I have the most experience with. And that would be starting with this episode, as soon as this goes live, so Friday morning for most of you, some of you at Thursday night, you'll notice that there will be a link on the sidebar on the site at thecreeppodcast.com where it will say forums. It'll direct you to forums. And that forum link goes to the AIE, which is our WoW guild, but that guild's totally expanding to other games, including StarCraft. There's a bunch of EVE players, and it's getting kind of crazy. 5,000 active players in this guild, and they are playing other games, including StarCraft, in a big way. And I will link you directly to that StarCraft board that we have set up. It's a message board for StarCraft players who are always looking to sort of start games and have matches and stuff. There you will find some of the friendliest people on Earth and guaranteed a group of people that will want to play and play at whatever level you're comfortable at playing at, but also if they are kicking your butt, they're not going to be jerks about it. I almost said dicks, and then I thought better about it. But then I said it anyway. They won't be that way. They'll be great. It'll be great fun. I guarantee it. So take some time, get to know a few people, you know, throw out a question. Hey, anyone interested in, you know, some friendly matches that we can try some different stuff? I promise you will find solace in that group of people. Any thoughts from your side of the world?
I just want to take another second to pimp these damn creep nights that have to happen, because this is exactly what I want to see. I just want this group of people that no matter, even if it's not the night that we're doing it, you're going to meet so many people this way. And a lot of them are going to come from the community that you're talking about, because that's, you know, a majority of the listener base is involved in AIE in some way, shape, or form. And just knowing that whenever you want to, you're going to have this list of people in BattleNet, you can be like, hey, you want to play a quick multiplayer match? And that's kind of my goal for this community in general, is just there's so much anxiety in StarCraft in general, and people being afraid to put themselves out there because they're going to get that whole Xbox Live crowd that are just bashing them over voice chat. That's what this community is going to be about, just to keep a tight-knit community that is welcoming of new players, where you can learn to play the game, just have fun.
Yeah, and we want to play there too, dude. You know, yeah. We want to be a big part of that, so watch for more forthcoming. I mean, hell, we're only episode 3, so we got a lot to do, but we'll do it. All right. Carrier strategies. Carrier has arrived.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Colby from Canada. I officially think that Brian's rapper name, B-Huff, is awesome and that he should rock an iced-out Zergling. But anyways, on to my question. Scott, I know that you've received a lot of criticism about this, but I'm not criticizing. I'm just wondering how you make the strategy work. I've tried Carrier several times, and I always get my ass handed to me. Anyways, keep up the good work, guys. Love the show. Take it easy.
Okay, well, I'm just going to tell you how I kind of do it every time I use them, if all things go right. And I don't always do it. Like the other day, I totally shook things up by doing a ground offensive that was based mostly on Dark Templars. And that can be rough if you're not expecting it or have a lot of detectors around, especially Zerg, who weren't really ready for me. But the Terran guys always have so many towers up, it's ridiculous. But anyway, here's how it'll usually go. I usually make, as soon as I can, two gateways, and those two gateways are pumping out zealots, and I usually have about 5 zealots before I do anything else. Okay, so it's like that's either my rush or my defense. That's who I have up. As soon as I get done with that, it's off to building I get a forge up, and I get a cybernetics core up, and you have to have those. They're prereqs to get Oh, what the hell's the, what's the flying thing called? Star, is it Starbase? Whatever it is.
Starport.
Starport. No, wait, that's, no, that's, wait, Terran. That's Terran. Ah, shite. Anyway.
God, we do this every episode.
Whatever it is, the freaking flyer crap thing, pooper outer. We, I make two of those as soon as I have the money. So pretty early on. Again, it's variable depending on what match I'm in and who I'm playing, and I know how they play and stuff like that. So it's not always the same. But if we're talking about a perfect, let's get to carry as fast as we can, this is what I'll do. So I'll build two of those. They're up and they're going. And I still need a observatory. No, wait. What's it called?
We're going to start writing.
Gosh, dang it. Hold on a second. I'm going to look this up because now I'm pissed that I can't think of it.
It's just, the funny thing was, is I just got done playing like five matches as Protoss and they're like all escaping my mind right now.
This is how it goes when you got, too much energy.
I do this in Warcraft all the time too. Like I could have just got done with a raid and the boss's name will just completely.
Oh, I still can't find it. Anyway, it's another prerequisite building that has the big ball on top. That's the one.
Fleet Beacon.
Fleet Beacon. Gosh dang it. Fleet Beacon. I knew it. All right. Fleet Beacon. You have to have that to make carriers. Can't make them tell you have that up. So I will put that up. But in the meantime, I'm using what did we decide they were called? The things that are actually pooping them out?
The carriers.
No, the building.
Oh, I don't know if we determined that.
I don't think we determined that. Anyway, whatever it is. That is... That over there is making it's making Phoenixes for me because I like the Phoenix a lot as an air-to-air unit, and I like to send those around with my carrier. So I do make a few of those, and they're relatively inexpensive, especially for Protoss. So I poop those guys out. They're over there waiting. By the time I've got my Fleet Beacon, and I've got other buildings needed to sort of upgrade interceptor speed and all that. As soon as they're available and as soon as I have the money, I start making them. And in the meantime, I'll make a zealot here and there, a stalker here and there, just to provide additional defense, because right now I'm kind of exposed. All my money is going to carriers. This is why people think it's a bad strat. But I think it's fun as hell if you pull it off. So I'll build two or three of them. And when I've got two or three of them going, and I'm constantly chrono boosting the buildings, right, to make them shoot out this stuff faster. As soon as I have three, maybe four, I start to scope around and see what's what. And I'll take them out and kind of test the waters and see what people have for air defense and stuff. Most of the time, they're not ready, and I start tearing things up. By the time they're already halfway through the first guy's town, I've got two more popping out. I send those over. I build the interceptors as they fly. I group them in the same hotkey group, and now they're tearing people up even quicker. And by the time I'm done, and this is maybe with like a 3-on-3 map, I've got 8 to 12 of them and enough money. And I haven't mentioned this, but I've got like two other bases going. This helps fund my war machine, right? Because you have to, dude. They're so expensive. And they take tons of supply. That's the other thing. It's the other thing I hate about them. So, I'm making an argument for the people to say they're a bad strat. There are a lot of things you have to worry about with making a carrier strat that you have to consider. It's cost. It's prereqs. It's time. They take forever to build. You're exposed because all the money's going to them. And while you're expanding, you don't have stuff sufficient to guard the expansions. So there's a lot of sort of... security by obscurity going on with me. So I just hope they don't know that I'm just down at this other base starting out a new one sometimes. So yeah, I do risky stuff, but I feel like that's the fun. The risk pays off if you can totally fool these guys and they never come over and check. Plus now they're so busy fighting the four that I did have out and I'm micromanaging them and targeting your stuff with my carriers one by one to the point that they have no time to react. So as soon as you're like a Viking gets it within range or something to do air to air, you're dead because I right clicked you and, you know, I mass attacked you. You're dead. You're out. And then I'm unstoppable. Like at 12 carriers with some air support and maybe some ground units to confuse people, especially computers. It's awesome. Like it is such a fun thing to do. So I have won many, many matches this way and I recommend people play with it. I don't care what the naysayers say. It's a blast.
Well, and I think two things, too, to take into account. A, this isn't common. It's unexpected in that you have that element of surprise because there is that moment of, seriously, he's going to try this. And you don't expect people to do it. Two, I think it definitely, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it works better in a co-op style map than it does one-on-one. Because co-op, you have other teammates to distract them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, you have that ability to kind of hide and stay back a little bit and hope that they're going after the other people that you're playing with versus trying to go one versus one. There's more opportunity for you to get exposed early 1v1 than if it's like a four versus four map.
Stargate. It's a Stargate.
I know. I got it.
It just hit me. I didn't even cheat. It just finally broke through my brain matter and said, what are you doing? You build me all the time. Why can't you remember me? And it's probably because I associate you with MacGyver. Oh, dear, Stargate. Anyway, but I'm telling you that going the other way, the Templar Archives, Dark Shrine kind of method of getting some stealthy ground action, pretty fun too, but also expensive. So
right.
The bottom line is Protoss endgame, expensive as hell.
And Protoss in general, expensive as
yeah,
hell.
Yeah, so. But... So you could see why people would say, well, if you're not killing everybody right away with Protoss, then none of their advanced units are worth it because, you know, the strategies just aren't as good or whatever. So cheap to build Zerg units, although their later stuff isn't so cheap. I would argue that.
And I mean, neither are battle cruisers or anything like that. I mean, late game tech is expensive. Yes, Protoss is probably a little bit more expensive, but the stuff, what else in the game has that gratifying feeling of just swarming the crap out of somebody with 12 carriers worth of interceptors?
Right. And it doesn't, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but Blizzard included this stuff for a frickin' reason. If this game was StarCraft and all it was you could make Zerglings, Zealots, and Marines, how boring is that game? That's boring, dude. I'm sorry. If that's all you use, fine for your strategy. I'm just saying, for me, that's boring as hell game. You got to have a full fleshed out, interesting game from beginning to end, and for me everything has that big ending if I can get to it. I strive to win under those circumstances way more than I do in the first 5 minutes, always.
Far more gratifying.
So if you like that, if you like what I'm saying, keep listening to this show. If you don't like what I just said, keep listening to the show anyway. All right, take that. Where were we? More calls. Sorry that we went off on that one. Stuck in campaign mode.
Hello, Scott and the new other guy. I've been playing through the campaign mode, and I'm about halfway through. I'm currently stuck on a level where you have to race another team to get 6,000 minerals. I've been trying this one a couple of times, and I suck at it. I use too many resources trying to get units built up, but if I don't, then I seem to get clobbered by the enemy. So I was wondering if you guys had any strategies or any tips that might be able to help me out. Thank you. Love the show.
All right. I remember the map, but I don't remember it being that hard.
Well, so this is where you get vultures.
Yeah.
And that is like the key to this map.
Yeah, which is funny because I never felt like vultures were the key to anything before, but here's a case where they are.
If you're struggling, vultures are the key, because you're not going to win this map or defeat this campaign mission by mining all the minerals.
Yeah.
The whole point is to go, you get all the ones that are randomly strewn throughout the map, but the key is to keep going back to the trash compactor type things that are giving you those mass increases in minerals. That's really the best way to do it, because yes, if you sit there and you try to mine the whole thing, you're eventually going to get overrun trying to defend yourself.
Yeah.
The vultures running all over the place is the easiest way to do it.
Nice. Very good answer. I could not have answered it better myself. I really enjoyed that campaign, actually, or that particular one, because it was a challenge. I'm not, you know, wasn't easy. So we're with you there.
Right. But the vultures, that's why they introduced vultures at that particular point, because that is really a good way to defeat that map.
They're a lot better in this game than they were in the first one.
Yeah, except, you know, they're too OP, so you don't get them in multiplayer.
That is true. Moving on to playing StarCraft 1 tip.
Greetings, Creepsters. This is not Jack Black. I am, however, calling you in order to inform you of Chaos Launcher, which is a free application that allows you to play the original StarCraft in windowed mode so that you do not have to deal with stretched out, weird looking graphics. Rock on.
Okay, for Mac players, we already could do this with Command M as our favorite friend.
Yes.
And it works with all Blizzard products and other games as well. And that's great on your Mac. On my PC, I play full screen StarCraft 2, obviously. And StarCraft 1, if I was to play it again, I would want something like this. Because full screen at the resolution my monitor's at now is a pretty ugly prospect.
Yeah, I'm more of a Mac person myself, so I haven't had to deal with this. But yeah, I couldn't imagine playing it like that. So that's definitely a good tip, because we had somebody that was asked about that in a previous episode. So
that's true.
How you do it.
StarCraft 1 still exists, folks. You can buy it at the store. I saw it yesterday.
Yeah, you can still get it on the Blizzard store in a digital download.
Yeah, $19. $19.99. Yep. It's crazy. What other strategy game ever lasted that long? Oh, quick comment before we get to our email. It's just something I was thinking about. What people are always trying to capture Blizzard's success. And you can there's stuff you could say about WoW that is specific to that success, and things you could say about other games, but I want to focus on StarCraft for a second. In the early days of RTSs, there was really Warcraft 1 and 2, and there was Command and Conquer and Red Alert. Okay? They were the right games that set the standards and kind of pushed RTSs forward. And I got to thinking the other day, why is it that Blizzard has only released two games in this series if you don't count the expansion? And they've made more money than Command & Conquer will ever hope to make. Ever. Yet Command & Conquer has like 15 games. First couple being probably the best. And the rest kind of not very good.
Yeah.
And I just want to point out, this is the strategy. Not the strategy. This is the culture of, let's put out two games, but make them so freaking good that nothing can compare, versus the strategy of, let's put one out a year and be less concerned about quality and be more concerned about meeting deadlines and making sure, you know, we hit it fourth quarter financial and all that crap. And for whatever reason, it just really sunk in this weekend. I think it's because I was at that same store and I saw Command & Conquer 4, Kane's, you know,
whatever 900th version of the game.
Yeah, Kane's Rash or whatever, the new one. and it's didn't do very well, and critically was kind of a failure. And it was, you know, it's all right. Some of the fans like it and stuff, and that's fine. But it just got me to thinking, these guys just churn that thing out, and they never, if they want to capture, they all say they want the Blizzard thing, the magic. Well, the magic is, don't make games the same way, you know, don't make games the way you're doing it now. Make them the way that Blizzard makes them.
They make them, especially with Command and Conquer, sell boxes. And that's what it all boils down to, is it's new and shiny for the sake of being new and shiny, because that means they can put another box on the shelf and sell it.
Yeah, and Blizzard has the advantage of saying, okay, new and shiny, got that covered, and awesome forever.
That's the thing they put, and obviously the game is slightly different even now 12 years later than it was when it first came back. And it's just like it is with WoW. They just continue to develop that product instead of saying, okay, it's been a year, let's burn it all to the ground, start over again from scratch and give you a whole new game.
Because if you're a company and you're trying to make money in the RTS market, why wouldn't you want to do it Blizzard's way, where all your time is spent on crafting one really awesome game instead of eight poor ones?
Yeah, because you're constantly starting over. I mean, the Command & Conquer games, quite a few of them are completely different than the ones before it.
Yeah.
So you're putting all that development time in, where instead you could sit there and go, okay, how can I make this game we already have better so more people will want to play, instead of making that dedicated, say, million that are playing your game keep buying new boxes every year or 2 years?
It mainly just makes me a little sad, because I loved Command & Conquer back in the day. I really did. It was awesome. Westwood Studios, those guys were great. They don't have anything to do with it now. They're kind of absorbed. But at the time, I just thought that stuff was great.
Well, and it was. It was back when RTSs were new and shiny in general as a genre. And they really, just like StarCraft did, took it to a whole nother level. And now it's just become the name. And the name to them is more important than the actual game you're playing. And like, oh, slap Command and Conquer on this RTS and throw some military units in there. And there you go.
They lost their way. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, they did.
All right. Enough of that. Let's read this email. We got one from No Name, who says, all my video settings for StarCraft 2 set at low to increase overall game performance. But which setting would you prefer? Hold on, I cut him off. Prefer to have maxed out to make your gameplay the most enjoyable? Gamma, physics, textures. You can only pick one. I'm going to pick textures. That makes the biggest difference on the slower computer when I've used it on a different PC. My PC, the doghouse I have right now, is so screaming fast that I can have it on max and I don't have a single hint of slowdown ever. But occasionally, like on the Mac end, where I have it's older, the video card's not quite up to snuff, I end up turning textures down, and that usually does the job for me. What's your experience with tuning that stuff?
Yeah, I'd also have to say textures. Being an exclusive Mac person myself, even with I have the new 27-inch iMac, but still, obviously, it's not as powerful as a doghouse system.
Right.
Textures, all because it's something that is omnipresent in the game all the time. It's not like physics that only come into play at certain times or gamma that only comes into play at certain times. You're always rendering texture. So by messing with that, that's going to be the biggest change to your performance.
Yeah, and resolution always makes a difference too. So knock that down some. But if you're asking for just one, which is what he's saying.
Texture.
Textures all the way, baby. Yep. Matthew O says, hey, you creeps. Thanks, man. Just wondering what you guys thought about the art style of StarCraft II versus the original StarCraft. Personally, I have found, Personally, I have found that I enjoyed StarCraft I's look and feel better because of the game's realism and grittiness to the game graphically. Whereas I find in StarCraft II it to look a little too cartoony. I think the whole space cowboy element is still there, but I can't seem to get over how cartoony it is. Just wondering what you guys' opinion was on this matter. Thanks, Matthew O. So I would say, I know what he's talking about, and they've made the same argument right recently, maybe more recently, against Diablo 3's development, saying it's too cartoony or too WoW-ish or something. And you got to remember, both these games are the next iteration in a series of games where the first game was all 2D, pre-rendered, you know, stuff. I think that's just such a different look that you just assume that they meant to be more serious and straight-laced with the first one and that this one is more cartoony. I think this one's just more animated.
Yeah, it's just more shiny. I mean, for lack of a better term, it's just you can only do so much with 2D pixel art.
Yeah, so when you see a... Oh, geez, I'm trying to think of an example. Let's take Marines, for example. In the first game, Marines just look like dots moving around. I really couldn't get much definition on a Marine. In this game, they are fully fledged, you know, little polygon dudes with a full set of animations, and they move around and do cool stuff. Now, if he's mainly talking about the cutscenes, like the real time stuff in the, you know, in the campaign, that's a different issue, and I can kind of see where you're coming from, but I also think it sort of matches Blizzard's art tendencies, and their you know stuff is a little more stylized and less realistic. I favor that though. Like
it's what gives it flavor. Again, yeah. It's that flavor piece. Like it just when we talk about death animations and things like that, that's all possible because of the way that the characters look and what they say and how they're animated. Like it just all fits together. It's that if it was that tangible and I could put my finger directly on it, then I could found my own gaming company to be as rich as Blizzard, because that's one of the things that really sets them apart is those details. And I think those are only possible by the art styles that they choose.
Yeah. And if his point is, and it's a point well taken, but if his point is that their style is more cartoony, I will agree with you. It is, but I think it's intentional. And I think that's the direction they like to take. It's stylized, lasts longer. You know, I remember when EverQuest 2 was coming out, it's kind of MMO related, but when that was coming out, everybody looked like a mannequin to me. It's like, man, this is just like overly, they're trying to be way too realistic, and it ends up looking like a bunch of fake mannequins. Everyone's got that, you know, uncanny valley look to their face, and it's just really weird. WoW comes along and says, no, we're going to go stylized, and it's going to be a lot, you know, for lack of a better term, cartoony. And it's created a longer lasting appeal for that game because that look can still last 5 years later when the tech has been far outgrown by other engines. But EverQuest 2, despite some cool effects and stuff, characters and stuff, they look like mannequins still to me. And now they look like worse mannequins, look like badly animated mannequins. So I prefer it. I prefer the way Blizzard does it. I like the look of the first game in its day. I thought it looked great. I feel like this is such a nice refinement of that, that it never really bothered me. So this email was interesting to hear this sort of, you know, this point of view. And I'm sure there's other people out there that kind of think this. We'd love to hear your feedback, of course, on this idea of how Blizzard does things with their art assets and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I see, again, where he's coming from. But I think the grittiness was almost necessary because of the tools available at the time. And you can't really do the shiny, cartoony style that he's referring to in 2D pre-rendered pixels.
Yep. So as usual, great feedback coming from everybody. You can send that stuff to thecreeppodcast@gmail.com. I want to make a quick mention of your dog who just shook its head. I could hear that. That was awesome. Of iTunes people, we've got so many great reviews on iTunes. Again, like we said, we spent like a week or week and a half in the first place spot. Got featured on a couple of different countries' fronts of iTunes, which is cool. Very happy to see that. And getting great comments and great reviews in there. Wanted to make mention of a couple recent ones. Michael Mayhill, Corey, and Siege all gave us, whatever his last name is, Tank, maybe.
That would be awesome.
All gave us 5-star reviews and said some very nice things. We like all your feedback. We even like the criticism. It makes us think, and we like to bring it up on the show and have a conversation about it. So keep all the feedback coming. We love it. Once again, the email is thecreeppodcast@gmail.com. Send your attachments or your written emails. We're glad to read them on the show if they fit. The website to visit is thecreeppodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thecreeppodcast. And always we're on Twitter. Twitter.com/extralife is where you can find me. B Huff over here can be found at twitter.com/B_Huff. That's spelled H-O-U-G-H. B_Huff. Brian, anything you want to say before we head out of here, before we stick our heads in the sand and leave?
Just keep your eyes open for my debut album dropping in stores soon.
Nice. Going all gangster on us, right?
You know it.
Sweet. Look forward to that. Looking forward to it. Another show. Episode 4 will happen next week. Watch for it. We're thrilled to be here again. Thank you guys so much. Can't wait to talk to you next week. Until then, take care.
See you next time.
Yes. Fleet Bacon.
Tonight on Kaprulu Action News... Outrage from the SCV Workers' Union reaches the Dominion's ears. Another barracks in Blackwater Station is set ablaze by Reaper's tomfoolery. And is Zerg Slime really good for your skin? Bringing you news you can trust from all over the galaxy. This is Kaprulu Action News. Here's Johnny McIntosh. Good evening. My name is Johnny McIntosh. Tonight's top story... The SCV Workers Union in uproar about a new scouting clause in their contract. Groucho Von Planck, representative of public affairs for the SCV Workers Union, spoke during a press conference this afternoon stating that the trend of sending SCVs into unexplored battlefields in early combat was dangerous and beyond the scope of their duties.
We have workers on the farthest reaching planets in the sector. And to send them into an unexplored area unarmed and alone is both appalling and downright scary.
Following the Union event, Emperor Mengsk sent out a formal letter stating, quote, "Sacrifices have to be made. How else are we to determine if we need to prepare for a Zergling rush or an aerial attack? Both Zerg drones and Protoss probes enter our facilities all the time. And until the Workers' Union can suggest a more suitable solution, the Dominion has no choice but to send SCVs defenseless into a hostile war zone. If a settlement cannot be reached soon, analysts predict SCV pilots will do what they're told anyways, because they're all a bunch of wimps. Coming up later, a doctor stationed near the Zerg homeworld of Char claims to have found the perfect skin moisturizer. And it's the last thing you'd expect. For up-to-the-minute news updates, follow Kaprulu Action News on Twitter. Username, Kaprulu News.
Good morning, and welcome to another replay of the week from Fubsy Gamer. What's up, guys, and welcome to Play of the Week, a mini-show where we analyze one of the coolest plays that's happened in this week in the world of StarCraft II. This play of the week comes to us from a tournament run by GOMTV.net. That's GOMTV.net. They're based out of South Korea, where, as we know, StarCraft II is like the national sport. This is the biggest tournament that has ever been held for StarCraft or for StarCraft II. The grand prize is something like $85,000 in US, something like that. It's huge. They're going to hold 3 of them this year and many more in the years to come. This play of the week comes to us in the round of 32 from the beloved TLO, the Liquid One, versus Hyperdub. It's a Terran versus Terran matchup, first game on Zell Naga Caverns. About halfway through the match, there's a point where TLO is trying to get up a ramp, trying to storm one of the expansions of Hyperdub, but Hyperdub has like 25 siege tanks or some obscene number like that of siege tanks and Vikings and Thors, and there's just no way TLO can be able to get up that. So what does TLO do? He cloaks a ghost, hides it, and then drops, and then like triggers a nuke to drop on the army of Hyperdub, which most of us have done before, at least playing around, if nothing else. As soon as that nuke, you know, that nuclear launch detected thing sounds up and the red reticle appears over Hyperdub's army. Hyperdub unseizes everything and runs away because he doesn't want any of that to get blown up. Well, as soon as TLO sees that, he unseizes his own siege tanks and blows up the ramp and then cancels the nuke. And then it proceeds to utterly destroy Hyperdub's army. What's so cool about this strategy is TLO, of course, you're using nukes, you're trying to destroy as much as you can, but in this matchup, I don't think TLO was ever planning on letting that nuke drop. I mean, he traded over there just so Hyperdub would back up his army so that TLO could get into a great position. He sieged up his siege tanks right where the nuke was supposed to drop, then he canceled the nuke and proceeded to, like I said, destroy Hyperdub's army. It was a fantastic game one. It's one of the best games that I've ever seen for StarCraft II. Now, for the GOMTV.net, there is a $20 subscription fee if you want to watch every single video that's happened of this tournament for this month. Or you can watch the first game of each series for free. That's why I chose this game. It's the first series. It's the first game in the series of TLO versus Hyperdub in the round of 32. Now, the last thing I want to do before I let you guys go is do a shameless plug of my own YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/FubsyWubkiss. FubsyWubkiss. Anyways, thanks for listening. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey there, Scott and Brian. This is Fubsy Gamer. First of all, I want to say sorry about the ambient noise. I'm here at my school in between classes, just on my lunch break, and decided to send you this little comment after hearing your first episode, while it was still fresh on my mind. Anyways, I want to make a comment about the fear that you guys were talking about playing online games, well, the 1v1s especially, in StarCraft 2 on Battle.net. Now, one of the things that I've done to be able to overcome this is I play with a bunch of people that I know. We all get together in a group of maybe 4 to 8 people, and we do a little King of the Hill style, like a tournament, I guess. Not a tournament. Where two of us play, and the winner stays, and the loser hops out, and the new guy comes in and plays again. And the rest of us are on vent. We kick out the guys who are playing, and we're talking about what's going on. We're talking about their strategies. We're talking about what they're doing. It's a fantastic way to be able to learn a little bit more, especially because everybody plays on about the same level. Because if you watch a lot of pro replays, a lot of times they're doing things that are just above your skill level. They're just above what you're able to do, and it gets pretty frustrating and pretty tough to replicate and to duplicate. But if you're watching people play on your own level, then you're able to learn from their mistakes, to learn from your own mistakes, and you're able to become better players together. Anyways, guys, it's a great show. Keep up the great work.
Fleet Bacon!
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!